I'm Haley from Gallifrey Public Radio, a Doctor Who fandom podcast and part of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the show you're checking out now. Shows on the network are individually owned, and opinions expressed may not reflect others. Find other interesting geeky shows at GunnaGeekNetwork.com.
And welcome to another Patreon first bonus episode of Play Comics, where I'm pretty sure I'm just going to continue to call them something about how I have no idea what I'm talking about, because that's really the situation here. And I'm talking to Justin Williams about manga and anime and manga because I don't know how to say words. And really, why the manga is always first and they never do an anime and then do a manga based off of that, or at least hardly ever. So Justin, how are you today?
Fantastic. I am doing pretty good. My girls are going on a nice little trip north out of the city to visit some friends now that the quarantine is dying down a little bit. They're still doing the social distancing thing, which is great. Got to be careful, but that means I have the whole place to myself. I get to podcast. I get to work on some stuff, clean the house, work on some Super Tangent podcast stuff. I haven't put out an episode on Super Tangent these past couple of weeks because I've been vigorously working on other stuff. So I need to kind of get back on that and kind of finish up this series on Super Tangent that I'm doing called The Quarantine Collection, where it's just a bunch of episodes, relating to how COVID-19 pandemic is affecting the entertainment industry as far as video games, bookstores, and especially cinema, because we're getting a lot of films delayed, like Ghostbusters Afterlife and Fast and Furious 9 have been delayed over a year. And then some early releases like Disney Pixar's Onward and Birds of Prey. So it's really interesting and it gives me a whole lot to talk about, but I'm wrapping that series up. And other than that, I am completely ignoring my family because I have a PlayStation 4. I have Devil May Cry 5. I have Final Fantasy 7 Remake and the Resident Evil 2 Remake. And those are all much more important than my family. So I'm satisfied.
Well, I'm glad we're on the same boat there because I also have a PS4 and I got a bunch of 2D fighters over the weekend. And so I'm not going to talk to Kaylee for at least a week.
I hope she read that in the contract. What 2D fighters did you get, if you don't mind me asking? Because I recently got Street Fighter, the 30th Anniversary Collection, and Goro Mark of the Wolves, the latest Fatal Fury game for the Sega Dreamcast back in 1999, I think. And 2D fighters are my jam, so I'm having a blast with those games. But what games did you get?
I got Samurai Showdown 5 Special and 6, the Art of Fighting Collection, Final Blade 2, I think it was.
Mm-hmm. Final Blade. The Last Blade.
Yes, The Last Blade. That's the one.
SNK game, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I dig that. Which Art of Fighting did you say you got?
One of the collections.
Okay. So it has like three games in it. One, two, and three.
The first three of them got the Capcom Beat 'em Up bundle.
Ooh.
I suck very even nice. When it's on easy.
Dude, I do too. Here's the thing about those freaking games. Like, they are so hard. There is no shame in admitting, like, you can't. Dude, I remember Capcom releasing some stupid classics collection on, like, Volume 1 on the PlayStation 2, and they never released a Volume 2 because they suck. And it was such a grand collection of, like, late 80s, early 90s era, like, shooters and beat-em-ups, everything from Gunsmoke to Mercs to, like, Captain Commando and some stuff that I'm sure the collection you just bought also has. And, dude, the difficulty of these games was out of this world. It was absolutely freaking insane. I can barely beat Street Fighter 2 now. But like playing Final Fight, like the old school Final Fight, dude, like, oh, those games are so hard. They knew exactly what they were doing. Those games are too hard, bro.
I couldn't get past the second level on easy playing Final Fight.
Yeah. I've beaten Final Fight, the first one, because I played it so much during the PlayStation 2 era. Back then, Capcom and SNK were going kind of crazy with like re-releasing all their old like fighting games and stuff. SNK came out with the King of Fighters collection, which was like the first five or six games. The Art of Fighting collection that you had. By the way, Art of Fighting 3 is phenomenal. They had two Fatal Fury collections and Samurai Shodown collection, which had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 5 Special and 6, and Metal Slug collection. It was like they were just trying their hardest to re-release and push out all of their old crusty arcade classics, because I kind of felt like maybe at the time they felt that arcades were going the way of the dodo, unless you're Dave and Buster's, which doesn't revere or celebrate or have any classic video games like that. In fact, it's odd. Dave and Buster's has no fighting games whatsoever. I've never been to a Dave and Buster's my entire life that had one fighting game. So I kind of feel like Capcom and SNK are consistently re-releasing their old stuff just to help old school gamers like you and me remember where they came from, remember the roots, and remember what it's like for those of us who had a regular NES and a Super Nintendo or Sega Genesis and, you know, fun arcade experiences to, you know, to play these games, especially with friends, you know.
How do you have an arcade without a fighting game in it?
Because Dave and Buster's is stupid, and they are, now don't get me wrong, I mean, when I first went to Dave and Buster's in Atlanta, Georgia with my older brother, eons ago for the very first time, I had no idea what this place was. And, my auntie showed me, and it was awesome. There was video games there that I'd never seen before. Like back then, even back then in the '90s, like they had the little gamer cards. And that was revolutionary to me. It felt like I was in the future, you know, because back home, all the arcades were still using either tokens or quarters. So that was really cool. But it's just flash over substance, you know. They have a lot of fun rail shooters, these giant arcades that give you epilepsy, and a lot of really tall versions of smartphone games. So it gathers a lot of the young audience who don't really care about a video game with substance. But if you're looking for a Neo Geo title, a fighting game, you're not going to find it. The coolest stuff that Dave and Buster's has are like, you know, they have Dance Dance Revolution, which if you're an arcade, you have to have DDR or a variant thereof. And they have some fun racing games and rail shooters. But other than that, honestly, Dave and Buster's is all flash and no substance. Plus, they have alcohol. So that's probably how they still stand on their own 2 feet.
Well, as is usual with us, we went off on a giant tangent. Maybe you could might even call it a super tangent.
I see what you did there.
But we are here today to talk about manga and anime. And it is manga, right?
I think so. I've heard it called both ways, and I've never seen one party correct the other. So I say manga just because I've always said manga.
Okay. Because I've kind of been back and forth, but it's one of those words that I read a lot more before I heard people saying it.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, those words are always fun. And I can't remember what game it was that I was asking you about, but I know a few months ago I was asking you, like, would you want to come on for some game that I knew was an anime? And you were like, hey, no, that was an anime first.
I remember that conversation, and I don't remember the game or the manga we were discussing. I thought it might have been like Romance of the Three Kingdoms or something, but that's a video game I've never played, nor a manga I've never read. I don't remember exactly what game it was that we were discussing.
It was Gundam. That's what it was.
Oh, it was it Gundam? Because, yeah, we did talk about that. Oh, well, hi, Gundam. Yeah. I see. And also, just to plug Super Tangent, Mobile Suit Gundam was the first anime in the franchise. It debuted on April 7th, 1979, and I am personally obsessed, like dangerously, unhealthily, toxically obsessed with Gundam. So all last month, I just celebrated Gundam by having Gundam whole episodes just dedicated to Gundam. I love Gundam. It is one of the, but it's one of those animes where it was an anime first. It was not a manga first. I don't know. It's just a great series, and I will always preach the gospel of Gundam because to me, it's just that perfect of a series. But yeah, that was not a manga first. It was definitely an anime. Now, there are some entries in the Gundam meta series that were manga first, like Gundam Unicorn. In 2011, they released an anime adaptation of Gundam Unicorn, the manga, and made into an anime. And Gundam The Origin as well was also a manga that they turned into an anime. But for the most part, it was an anime first. Very popular, like, Shonen Jump anime, such as One Piece, Dragon Ball Z, Bleach, and Yu Yu Hakusho, if I'm not mistaken, were all manga first before they got their anime versions that are so popular in America today. I think, I don't know about Inuyasha. I don't know. I didn't do my research because I'm a great person. But... yeah.
I mean, let's be real. You did about as much research as I did here.
That does make me feel better. Thank you.
But what I'm really curious about is why do you have the manga getting going first for the most part? Because like in the early days of anime, it makes sense to me. You take a manga that exists that's already popular and you make the anime with it. But now, you know, you've got people who have ideas. I can't name you any people off the top of my head because I just don't remember names, especially when they're not English, because I'm horrible like that. But I know that you've got people where they can be like, oh, George Lucas is making a thing. I'm going to go watch it no matter what it is.
Right. Well, I mean, that is a really good question. And I kind of think that like, with manga, you know, you don't need an entire studio to come up with a story and a manga. You meet two people, you know, sometimes one, whereas you need an entire studio to come up with a decent anime, even if it's just an adaptation of material that already exists. You know what I mean? So kind of my issue with anime these days is that a lot of it is fantastic. You see Netflix all the time come up with original in-house anime. Like they'll outsource, you know, a studio like Production IG did for the latest Ghost in the Shell stuff, or whoever did Cannon Busters and Beastars and like all these. Oh, Ghost in the Shell was based off a manga, by the way. But like all these other like Netflix exclusive animes that don't have a source material, that don't have, that aren't based off of anything like that. And I just think the thing is that it's so much easier to have a manga. It's simpler to have a manga, and it takes less time to come out with a manga and keep it long running. You don't have to worry about ratings, determining if it's going to stay on the air or not. You don't have to worry about, I don't know, other crap. There's just so much less to worry about when you're coming out with a book than when you're coming out with a show. And I think that's why, largely why manga comes first. It's just easier to come up with a story, write it, draw a couple of characters, put it together in a polished story and release that, see who likes it or not, then come out with an anime if it's successful, then spend 20 times the manpower and the money on an anime and watch it fail spectacularly. So I think when you're thinking of the business aspect of it, I think that has a lot to do with it. Anime studios have a lot more at stake releasing something
than, you know, your indie manga artist who's maybe new on the scene or even a veteran, you know?
So looking at Gundam specifically, since it's really what got this whole thing started, how long after the anime got going did the manga start coming out?
That's a good question. I don't really know. There's so many different, I mean, Gundam is 41 years old this year, and you know, they were always much more animation focused. They have television shows, theatrical films, original video releases, original internet releases, and all sorts of short stories. And you know, I mean, they've retold the original Mobile Suit Gundam so many times. I can't count on both my hands how many mangas there are based off of the original Mobile Suit Gundam. So you asked how long was it until after they released the manga? To be honest, I have no idea. I should know, being as 90% of the useless knowledge in my head is somehow Gundam related. I should know that, but I actually don't. The show was released on April 7, 1979. It ran for a year. Then they released a movie compilation which told the same exact story of Mobile Suit Gundam. They just released it in theaters, and instead of having 43 episodes that were half an hour long, they just released it in three films that were 2 hours long each. So you get this condensed story that removes some of the more unrealistic elements and keeps it really short. So a lot of people rather watch the movie trilogy than the TV show, even though they tell the same exact story. And that came out in 1981. The third film came out in 1982. And then the first sequel, animated sequel series, Zeta Gundam, came out in 1985. Where the manga lands for the original Mobile Suit Gundam, I have no idea. And honestly, not every Gundam anime has a manga adaptation, to my knowledge. I know Gundam does. I know Gundam Wing does. I know Gundam X does, I know G Gundam does, but the first, I don't know. There was a manga that was released in the early 2000s called Mobile Suit Gundam 0079, and it was really released in America because at the time, Americans... Like, the Mobile Suit Gundam movie trilogy was released in America, but not the TV show. We got the movie trilogy in 1998, even before Gundam Wing was syndicated on Cartoon Network, but we did not get the TV show, the original 1979 TV show, until 2001. So that manga was supposed to be kind of a gap between people who maybe went to video stores and saw the movie trilogy like I did and the people who hadn't seen the TV show yet because it wasn't released in America. That was released in the early 2000s, but I doubt that that was the first Gundam manga. I doubt that it would have taken them 20 years to come out with a manga based off the first series. So I theorize it was somewhere in the mid-80s where they came out with the first actual Gundam manga, and I could be totally off about that, but that's what I think.
That seems to make sense to me, though, because if you've got a property that is that popular, then, you know, people tend to try to push it into as many different media as they can.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, I was going to say for America, but honestly, on a global scale, if you look at things like Star Trek and Star Wars, you know, they're really the same exact world as Gundam is, as far as the multiple types of media and stuff like that. In fact, one of my favorite books to read when I was a kid was a Star Wars manga, which was fascinating. And it was beautiful. It just retold the movies in manga format. They had them at our bookstore, Barnes & Noble's, a really long time ago. I'm pretty sure they're out of print now, but they were absolutely phenomenal. And to think that like Star Wars would go so far as to reach out to anime and manga fans like that and actually make it work successfully, that's really freaking cool. Because there is no Star Wars anime, you know. There's a whole lot of animated cartoons nowadays, especially after the release of The Force Awakens. But there's no anime, but there is a manga. So that's pretty cool. But yeah, something so popular can only exist by not putting all of its ducks in a row. Maybe something like Attack on Titan can work. Like, or Pokemon. Well, not even Pokemon. Like, Pokemon has to exist in multiple avenues. So if I guess the thing is, if an anime is going to be successful, if a franchise is going to be successful, it has to have those different avenues like Star Wars and Gundam and Star Trek and Pokemon, where it's a game, it's a manga, it's a book, it's a lunchbox, it's a toy set, you know, it's a collection of films, it's stickers and it's clothing. You know, you have to build a franchise out of it. You have to go the Star Wars route, the Star Trek route. I'm sorry. You can't just come out with one show and be like, yeah, this is fine. It's not. You're not going to last.
I mean, I really can't think of any really popular franchise that hasn't branched down into other things. Like Arrested Development may be popping into my head, but even things like that are super niche audiences.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. But doing that is always a smart move and a bold one, too. It just lets your audiences know that we care about everyone. It's always nice for a franchise to not have a homogenous fan base. If you have, I mean, it'll last for a while, but, you know, Gundam Wing, I think, is a really good example as the Gundam series that introduced me to the franchise, most of America to the franchise. It was released on March 6, 2000, I think, in America. And kind of thinking about Gundam Wing in particular, like, you know, what if that wasn't released in America? What if Gundam Wing was only exclusive in Japan? There are still, I think, four Gundam series and I can think of off the top of my head that have never had an American release or an American, like an English dub or a Canadian dub. In fact, the 1998 Mobile Suit Gundam movie trilogy that was released in America was a Canadian dub, if I'm not mistaken. Which is super cool. But Gundam Wing was actually more popular in America than it was in Japan. So if they hadn't made that bold move, Sunrise Studios, who does Gundam, they would have completely missed out on that many fans, that much more money and merchandise and outreach, you know? So it's always good for a franchise to do various things. Not everyone plays video games, but not everyone watches movies either. So have a novel, you know, have a manga, have a cartoon and an anime and a Netflix deal and all this stuff. Especially now, it's just a great time to thrive. Now that we're all stuck at home, you know?
I mean, one of the things that made me think of was the Wheel of Time book series also has a little bit of a comic book run for it. And I've started to read that. I mean, I've read the book series most of the way through. The last one, I got caught up in life and never finished it. But the comic series just lets you see things from a little bit of a different perspective. And there's stuff you can do in a comic since there's pictures that you can't really do when it's just words on a page. And that's one thing I'm excited with going back and looking at all these anime and manga-based games, because you've got a second or a third way that you can experience the franchise and get a whole new perspective on things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And yeah, like I said, that's just the way to go. It's really, really cool. You know, like a lot of people, the first time they experienced a franchise wasn't in the franchise's original medium, you know, Pokemon is a really great example. I honestly don't know if the anime is based off the game or if the game is based off the anime. I think the game came first, but a lot of people didn't experience Pokemon that way. So a lot of people's first experience with Pokemon was the show. Others was the card game. And then yet others was the video game for the original Game Boy, the blue, yellow, and red version. So when you have that many different formats, you're making sure that everyone can be included and that your fan base is not, you know, homogenous, and that they're, you know, and that's so important for a series to thrive. I think it's really, really cool when you have a film like what is it? The Live, Die, Repeat movie, Edge of Tomorrow, Tom Cruise and Emily Blunt. That was based off a manga called All You Need Is Kill, which is an amazing title. But it's based directly off of this manga. And a lot of American audiences haven't read this manga. I don't know if there's an English version of the manga, and there's no anime adaptation of it. There's just the manga and the American movie. So it's really cool to kind of see the movie, do the research on it. I mean, even if you just like Wikipedia, there's a little blurb, I'm sure, on there that talks about All You Need Is Kill. And you click on that and you're like, holy crap, now I'm interested in manga, you know, and you just produced a whole nother experience for someone who thought they were just going to see a movie. And that's kind of the power of doing awesome adaptations of manga based work. It helps you become cultured. You're enjoying an experience that is not from your homeland. And that's beautiful. You know, it really is.
Are you somebody who goes back and reads or watches the source material after you find something that you like?
Sometimes, yeah. Ghost in the Shell, I saw the movie, which is one of the greatest anime films of all time. And I got invested in the series. Ghost in the Shell is a pretty awesome series. There's a new Ghost in the Shell series right now on Netflix that I started watching last night, and it's great. But Ghost in the Shell is based off a manga. I've never watched the manga. I've never read the manga. Akira, 1988, one of the greatest anime films of all time. I have never read the manga it's based off of. Gantz is another one. Berserk is another one. Those are two of the most gory, violent anime series I've ever seen. And they're both based off of manga that I've heard is 20 times worse when it comes to the gore and violence. I've never read them. So, to be honest, if I'm satisfied with a manga, unless I become obsessed with a franchise like Gundam, if I'm just satisfied with the anime, I won't feel the need to go back to the manga. I've never read, faithfully read, you know, Dragon Ball Z manga. Maybe I'll do that for like American comic books, but like just so I can kind of understand the films and stuff. But like, I don't really do that with anime. Manga, I read first, I enjoy it. And then anime, I see first and I enjoy it. I don't feel the need to really go back to the source material unless it is hyper intriguing. Like, I'll do that with Gundam. I'm so in love with Gundam that I'll do that. I'll watch Gundam Unicorn and then go back and, you know, at least find scans online of the manga that it's based off of to see kind of where the differences are. Especially because... with animated adaptations, they usually take very creative liberties with how the show ends. Anime endings are almost drastically different, always drastically different than the manga. And so when an anime ends and it's kind of dissatisfying, you can go back to the manga and see if it's better. And more often than not, the manga has the better ending. But yeah, for the most part, I don't really go back and read the manga. Not if I don't feel like I don't have to.
That's probably where I'll end up being, too. I mean, I've heard lots of stories of, you know, filler episodes in anime coming around because they were trying to just adapt the manga and they caught up with it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying that's good or bad. It just kind of is what it is. And, you know, you get some fun episodes that don't really matter in the overall plot, but they're fun to watch. And that's not a bad thing, if you ask me.
It's not, no. And honestly, you know, the more material that you have, the better. That's how you keep people. You know, it's like a fast food restaurant. Only in rare occasions does a fast food restaurant succeed when there's only two or three items on the menu. Most of the time, you need something a little bit more extensive, you know, maybe something exciting, you know, like McDonald's menu is pretty intriguing, especially when you taste it for the first time as a kid you know what you like, but you're like, oh, there's burgers and there's nuggets, you know, there's soda and juice and there's milkshakes, you know? So, yeah, it's just exciting to have so many different mediums. It's awesome.
So I know the one Gundam game that I have that I know for sure is actually Gundam and not just robots fighting as part of another franchise is a repro cart of Endless Duel for Super Nintendo.
Woo! That is a fun game.
I mean, it's robots fighting in a 2D fighter. It's like two wonderful things smashed together.
Yeah. I'm mad that they never... I'm mad that they never really stuck with that. There are tons of great Gundam games. Most of them are just third person action platformers or like arcade style third person, I guess you would call it. Now, I don't want to say fighting games because they're not fighting games, but like third person like action titles where they're just super fast paced and they're super fun. Like the Gundam Versus series. That's all that is. But other than Gundam Battle Assault, which was a 2D fighter for the PlayStation, and Gundam Battle Assault 2, which was absolutely phenomenal, they never really, outside of that, expanded on Endless Duel. And that makes me mad because a 2D... I mean, could you imagine if they made like a hand-drawn 2D fighting game with Gundam today? And it looked as good as, the latest Guilty Gear games that Arc System Works are doing, or like Dragon Ball FighterZ, like, you know, or King of the Fighters 13, which is one of the best 2D fighting games, best looking 2D fighting games ever. Like they could do so much if Arc System Works or Capcom or SNK got their hands on a Gundam license and started making 2D fighting games again, because Endless Duel was so much fun. That's a crusty Super Nintendo game. It doesn't even look that great, but it is so much fun to play. And Gundam Battle Assault for the PlayStation 1 and 2, or Gundam Battle Assault 1 and 2 for the PlayStation 1 really captures that with better graphics. But they just kind of stopped after that, and I would like them to reconsider.
And you've got a ton of people making 2D games again now. You know, it's super nostalgic, but they're good for a reason and they hold up for a reason. And I wish more people would make them.
I wish too. Sometimes they do something exciting. A few years ago, they came out with a new Double Dragon Neon. Which was cool, you know, conceptually it was fun. It was self-referential and made fun of itself, but it was fun. It was fun to have a Final Fight style platformer that brought back the Double Dragon name. Streets of Rage 4 just came out, and that's a beautiful looking 2D beat 'em up. Like, and I want more nostalgic stuff like that. And I can't praise Arc System Works enough for the work that they've been doing. They've been making the best 2D looking fighting game since Guilty Gear XX, which is a PlayStation 2 title, you know? And then they came out with Guilty Gear Xrd a while ago, and now they're doing Guilty Gear Strive, which is supposed to be coming out soon. And my heart just melts. My brain just explodes whenever I watch these YouTube clips. It's like, how do they get a 2D fighting game to look that good? How clever and manipulative of cell shading and 3D gameplay do you have to be to come up with a game that looks as good as that? Or is Dragon Ball FighterZ, which is almost as good as watching the anime, in my opinion. Like, there needs to be a deeper reverence, I think, for 2D gaming. Because once upon a time, that's all there was.
Kaylee thought I was watching the anime when I was playing Dragon Ball FighterZ.
Yeah. Like, that's how good it is. It's stinking incredible. I can't tell you the utter disappointment when King of Fighters 14 came out and it just looked like crap. I don't know if you played that game or seen it. Ugh. It looks so terrible. It looks like a PlayStation 2 game. It looks so stinking bad. In like an era of Street Fighter 4, Street Fighter 5, it's like, and especially Guilty Gear and Dragon Ball FighterZ, like there is no reason SNK of all people should be making games that look like crap. Like there just needs to be a deeper reverence for 2D gaming. There really, really does. Whether it's a shooter, whether it's a top-down platformer. And of course, you go on Steam, you see a lot of 2D indie games that are based off of games like Final Fight, Mega Man X. That's all good. You know, Sonic Mania is one of the best games of like the past 5 years. It was easily the best Sonic title like since Sonic Adventure 1 and 2 on the Dreamcast. And it was just, you know, a 2D game. I want more of that. I want more of that. But the game industry is not about that right now. They're focused on making the best FPS game and killer action RPGs, which they're doing right now. And I love it. I love playing what I've got. I love Final Fantasy VII Remake. You know, I love Tekken 7. But at the end of the day, I just want a good 2D retro game.
I'm right there with you. Kaylee can't handle a lot of the 3D stuff. So anything that comes out 3D, we got to kind of test out to see if she can even handle it.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to be able to play things with my wife. You know, I married her for a reason.
Right.
I married her for a lot of reasons, but one of those is that she'll play video games with me.
Yeah. That's kind of important, you know.
You got to have hobbies you can do together, and that's one of ours.
Yeah. Yeah, that's super important. Me and my wife love video games, and when we were dating, we played games together, but, like, we were never, ever on the same page about games. Like, I've always been a Nintendo guy. So, like, well, I mean, you know, I've been playing video games since the regular NES. Her first introduction to gaming was, like, the N64 era. And so after that, we kind of have that shared experience. But as far as the Sega Dreamcast, the PlayStation 1 and 2, the Xbox 360, you know, we don't really have a lot of shared experience. And now that we both share a PlayStation 4, like the games that we both play are wildly different. Like she is the queen at Minecraft, and she is a sharp shooter at Overwatch. Two games that I just don't play, you know? Sometimes I'll try it, especially Minecraft, but like, I know those aren't my go-to, and she knows that like, I like fighting games, I like RPG games, and they're just not her speed. She doesn't like action. She'd rather build a city, you know, or strategize taking over one, like Age of Empires 2, which is a fantastic game, instead of beat someone up in the middle of the street somewhere. So I like the fact that my wife plays video games. Like for me, that's hot enough. Like, I'm satisfied with that. And we're both teaching our daughter to play games, to play certain games, safe ones, with particular limitations. So that's not what she wants to do all day long like I did when I was a kid, you know? But, yeah, it's really cool to have that and to be able to do that together. That's a beautiful blessing. I mean, there's so many couples where the woman loves video games and the man doesn't understand it. Or vice versa. And I really think that for a deep passion like that, if it's passionate enough for you to podcast about and you're in a relationship, then the other party should definitely be interested. It's just a blessing when they are.
Yeah, it sounds like we both got really lucky with that.
Yeah. Yeah, we definitely did. Whenever I want to kill her in her sleep, whenever she wants to suffocate me with a pillow, we can just duke it out in Mario Kart. Instead.
See, our go-to problem solver is Super Puzzle Fighter 2 Turbo.
Ooh. Oh my gosh, you guys are geeks.
Yeah.
I don't even think my wife knows what that is.
Oh, yes, you should make sure that she learns.
Which is funny because she absolutely loves Tetris. So I know that puzzle games are like part of her shindig. They're part of her video game DNA. I think. Well, Super Puzzle Fighter 2 Turbo, the only problem that I have with it is that it's a little more complicated than Tetris. Tetris is so stupid simple. And I back in the day, there was an arcade here called the Space Station, which had the most beautiful, glorious video games. It was like the anti-Chuck E. Cheese. It was for like grown-ups, you know. And they had the best games. And I always played Super Puzzle Fighter 2 Turbo, and like it was really confusing. It actually took me a long time to like actually understand it, the mechanics, how it worked. I get it now. So if I show my wife that game, I'm also going to have to teach her how to play. And I just hope that like she'll be invested, because it's such a fun idea for Capcom to just kind of like do that, use these chippy characters from Street Fighter Alpha and Darkstalkers and come up with a game that's not a 2D fighting game, technically. yeah, that's a fun go-to. I think that's a very fun game.
Yeah, the other go-to for us is Tetris Battle Gaiden.
Ooh, what is that for?
That is for Super Nintendo, but it only came out in Japan. But it's kind of the same idea as Puzzle Fighter. You've got some character that you pick, and as you're making connections there playing Tetris, they have some power-ups you can get. And depending on which character you have, there's different power-ups.
Mm-hmm.
And you're just trying to destroy the other person and clear your space first.
That's awesome. About a month ago, for absolutely no reason at all, I was looking up the history of Tetris. And probably because it's one of the first video games I ever played. But I was just curious because I like you said, like I did know that there were some. But I was looking up the history of Tetris and saw that there were so many different kinds of Tetris that weren't ever released in America. And I thought that was like really, really cool. Even like home console Tetris. There was all these weird ones for like, there's this one called like Tetris 4D that was released for the Dreamcast. And I have such a limited memory of the Tetris games that were released in America by console. Like I remember Tetris and Tetris 2 for the Super Nintendo. And then for the N64, there was Tetris Sphere, which was a little weird. But there was also the new Tetris, which was more traditional. At the same time, I think the PlayStation 1 had Tetris Plus and the next Tetris. And then after that, I kind of fell off the Tetris map. But there's so many different kinds of Tetris now, like Tetris 99 and Tetris Effect, which I just think are just so neat and so cool. It's amazing that this classic Russian game has just exploded. You know, it's easily one of the most popular video games, top five, I dare say, worldwide video games of all time. Tetris is just awesome.
It's just so simple in everything. And the complete lack of a story means you can put anything on it that you want, and you're not contradicting anything, so you don't have to worry about all the super fanboy people coming in and saying you're doing it wrong.
Right. Like,
we have Tetris Worlds, which I've never played. I don't think Kaylee has ever played either, but I have it for Xbox because when I brought home an Xbox, I knew she would kind of give me a little bit of crap about it because she hates Xbox.
Oh.
Well, I mean, her brother also got an Xbox. He got it early, so they only had the big old Duke controllers, and he had absolutely nothing on it that she would want to play.
Right.
So I got an Xbox, and it's, hey, here's Tetris World. So there's at least one game you will want to play on it now.
That's cute. Yeah, that's kind of the thing with new consoles that I always worry about is that, am I really thinking about the ultimate price? Like, a Switch for $300 seems more than worth it. And I still don't have one. I'm very disappointed in myself because I've wanted a Switch forever and I just haven't got one yet. But then I think about, okay, if I want this to work, I should probably get more than one controller. Costs a lot of money. Is this a bundle? Does it come with games? You know, that's more money because Nintendo titles, dude, are super expensive and they last. Those prices last like forever. Like if a game is $60, in 3 years, it'll probably still be $60. I don't know why that's the case on Nintendo consoles, but like if I wanted to buy Breath of the Wild right now, that is not a new game. But I almost guarantee you I won't find it new in stores for less than $59.99, $60 American. It's crazy. But yeah, I had to make sure that when we bought a PlayStation, we there were games that my wife was going to play it because I know what I want. I know she's not going to play that stuff. So I just got to be very careful with that. Like if I bought an Xbox right now, the only game I would buy is Cuphead. Because that's probably the greatest 2D game, period, of this current generation. The blood, sweat, and tears that they put into making that game, astronomical. That is one of the best looking games ever, 3D or 2D. But I know my wife wouldn't like it because she doesn't like shooters and stuff like that. So I'd have to get her like Fable Anniversary or something. You know, that's more her speed, which is ironic because she doesn't like RPGs, but she loves Fable. She kind of grew up on it. We were playing that while we were dating. So, you know, as long as it's, I guess it's fine, like, if we're not playing games together, as long as I know her tastes, you know, and I can at least accommodate her in that way.
Yeah, I was trying to think of what I would get on Xbox, and Cuphead really is the only thing I can think of as well. I mean, if I was still going to the flea market, I would probably be more open to getting an Xbox One, just because I'm sure that they're, you know, I'd be able to find somebody selling their kids' games.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, honestly, at this point, I think I'm probably just going to wait for the Xbox Series X. I didn't think I'd really be interested in that, honestly. But I don't know. We'll see what the price point is when it comes out. But dude, it looks absolutely amazing. I still do want an Xbox One. And I think that's the problem, because the Series X is coming out so soon that I might as well just hold off and get that. Because dude, by the time I actually do buy an Xbox One, the Series X is going to be out. And I don't want to be left behind. I've never been left behind on a generation of home console gaming. I refuse to do it now. I will get a Series X and probably a Switch. You know, the PlayStation is, you know, whatever. Sony will always be there as far as I'm concerned. But I want a Switch, and I don't even know what they're going to be coming out with on the Series X. I did hear the newly announced Assassin's Creed Valhalla, which looks great, will be debuting on the Series X. And of course, Halo 6, Halo Infinity, whatever it's freaking called. But yeah, I'm kind of excited for the new home console generation.
I have never had the current generation, really.
Yeah.
Until now. I think technically I got a PS3 before PS4 came out, but it was like, the PS4 was close, so it's already kind of felt like it was dead.
Yeah.
And we had a Wii. No, we had a Wii U when that was still the newest thing before the Switch. And that was before the Switch was super announced and everything.
Yeah. What did you think of the Wii U?
I liked it. I mean, I could definitely see where people had the complaints about it. And I mean, the gamepad was either really great for whatever game you were playing with or just stupid. It didn't seem like there was anything really in the middle there.
Yeah, Nintendo is always so innovative. They were, you know, the first console to really have a four-player emphasis for their games and for the hardware, you know, four controller jacks. They made that popular so that when, you know, they basically paved the way for it to look normal, like the new normal for the Sega Dreamcast and the original Xbox when that came out. You know, the controller. And joysticks. You know, using joysticks. No one was doing that before Nintendo did with the Nintendo 64. They're always so innovative. The Wii was the most innovative. To this day, the Wii is the most innovative home consoles of all time. And the Switch and the Wii U just kind of take after that. They just pick up what the Wii put down. My experience with the Wii U was phenomenal. I think I like the Wii U way more than most people did. Because it was kind of the original concept that the Switch perfected. The Switch is a home console and a handheld all in one. You know, I mean, you know, hence the name Switch. And the Wii U was kind of like the prototype for that. I can't tell you how much fun it was, like, taking this giant handheld controller going in my room and playing and practicing, you know, Smash Brothers, Wii U, instead of always having to hog the living room and do it. I just thought that it was just such an interesting, innovative idea. Now, it didn't work for a whole lot of games, like you said. It didn't work for Star Fox Zero. It worked for Mario Kart, especially if you're playing with three other guys. But it, yeah, there's a couple of games where that sort of technology just didn't work. But for the games where it did work, it really worked. So overall, I had a really good experience, and that's probably why I want to switch so badly today, because that's the only home console that emphasizes local multiplayer and playing with friends right next to you, instead of always having to, you know, rely on the internet and playing with strangers from afar, which is fun too. It's just not the same experience that, you know, guys like you and me might have grown up with playing classic 2D games. You know, we might have grew up playing together in the same room with our neighborhood friends or our siblings. And that's an experience I don't ever want to go away. And Nintendo cares about that experience. Whereas I don't even think you can use a PlayStation or an Xbox without the internet. Honestly.
I haven't tried to use it without the internet because I've got it plugged in and doing its thing anyway. One of the reasons I got the Capcom Beat 'em Up bundle was because they did emphasize in that set that you can play with people on local multiplayer. And if anybody ever makes a 2D fighter that doesn't have local multiplayer, yeah, one of those ways was right. But if anybody makes a 2D fighter that doesn't have local multiplayer, then they're just shooting themselves in the face.
Yeah, absolutely. There's no way that I get the reliance of the internet as like the prominent way to play games nowadays. I do get it. I don't like it, but I get it. But it can never replace local multiplayer. It just can't. I can't stand games that are not MMORPGs, but require the internet to use. Or like games that are either single player or online multiplayer, and that's it. I hate that, dude. It drives me crazy. It blew my mind that Doom, first-person shooter from 2016, did not have a local multiplayer deathmatch. It blew my mind that Halo 5 got rid of its local multiplayer deathmatch. Like, what are you doing? Like, you're not Destiny. If you're not Destiny, don't be Destiny. It worked for Destiny because Destiny is a legit MMORPG masked as a first-person shooter. It drives me crazy when they're just kind of like doing stuff because they think it's cool and it works for everyone else. You play these basketball games and these racing games and you can't even play with your friends or you can't play offline. Like, that's how you ruin an entire genre of games, by over-relying on the internet or doing it because everyone else is doing it. That's part of why Tony Hawk 5 totally blue chunks, because they were doing the same exact thing as these MMORPGs are doing. It's like, wait, is this a sports game? This is a skateboarding game. Why are you making it so overly internet reliant and complicated and removing local multiplayer is the stupidest decision that game studios could be making these days? If it works, it works. If it doesn't, then please don't try to include it, because you definitely don't have to. It's just stupid. Ugh. Anyway.
Well, I think that combined with the fact that Kaylee says dinner is ready is a good place to wrap things up.
Dinner is
I live in
good.
The future from you, so it's dinner time.
Yeah. It's only lunchtime here, and my wife is gone, so I will be making lunch for myself. And then I'm probably going to play Resident Evil 2 until my daughter comes home. So.
And then you play Resident Evil 2 Cute Bunny Edition.
Indeed. Yeah. Which would be really adorable if they actually did make like a horror game like that for kids with no blood. There's just like flower petals and balloons and confetti. I bet you in the future Capcom's going to smart up and they'll do something like that. They better. Otherwise.
They don't even have to credit me for that. I don't care.
You just saved the future. You saved the next generation of gamers. Yeah.
That is my legacy. They'll know your legacy. So, Justin, why don't you tell us again where we can find you on the internet if people want to hear more from you?
So, my website is currently under construction. That's one of the huge things I've been working on lately. It's just rebuilding supertangent.com from scratch. And so you will know when it's up and running. But for now, you can find my podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Stitcher. You can find me as a human being on Twitter, even though I'm never there, at twitter.com/superproclivity. Find me on Facebook. That's where I'm always at. Just find me, Justin Ezo Williams, or find my Super Tangent page on Facebook, or join my Super Tangent group, Nerds and Knowledge, where we discuss stupid fun stuff like this. We just talk shop, talk nerd. It's fun. You'll find me on Facebook. So for the time being, until the website comes back up, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, that's where we find my show. And you'll find me on Facebook.
Since I am recording this really, really early, if the website is up, then this is the part where I will tell you that the website is up and Justin is full of shit because he can't see the future. I will also have links to all of Justin's stuff down in the show notes because that's so much easier than trying to spell words that I can't even say.
Yay.
Like proclivity.
Yeah, that's a stupid word. I don't know why I did that.
And also, don't forget, if you want to hear these episodes as soon as they're available to the select top secret fun group of people, go support me on Patreon. You just need to hit that dollar a month level. It's the lowest level you can do, and you get these episodes when they come out. I mean, if you're cool waiting a month later, then yeah, wait a month. Don't give me your money. I don't care. Just make me cry. You're going to make my cat sad and they're going to cry.
Oh,
don't make me send you pictures of my sad cat.
Dear God, this is getting serious.
One of them only has three legs.
Really?
Yeah, that's true.
Oh, can we make a 2D fighting game starring him in his honor?
Yes.
Because we need Feline Fighters 2 Turbo immediately.
You want to know the best part?
What's the best part?
Her name is Nyx.
Is what?
Nyx, N-Y-X, named after the Greek goddess of the night, and I think that is a wonderful character name for a 2D fighter.
Oh my gosh. That's pretty amazing. I mean, that's better than half the 2D fighting games like on the Super Nintendo. Ever played a game called Balls?
For like 5 seconds.
I'm so proud of you that you understand that you know that there's a game that exists out there called freaking Balls, and it's stupid. So Nyx, that's a badass name. I dig it.
Also, if you want to check out some other wonderful geeky shows, head on over to GunnaGeek.com. Check out the other shows on the Gunna Geek Network. But other than that, just go check out some new things that are fun and other things. I don't know how to end things anymore. This quarantine is making me not know how to do stuff. But now, and where did the button go? And now I'm recording on the internet.
Okay, cool beans.
So we are all nice and recording.
All right.
And welcome to another... No, that was bad.
That was terrible.